Okay. All right, listeners, you're listening to Green Left Radio. And on the line, we have Sue Bolton, who has always been, is usually a regular guest on our program. And Sue Bolton is a Socialist Alliance councillor who is actually currently running for re-election as part of the Sue Bolton Moreland team, which is a team of Socialist Alliance and Community Independence running for the Moreland Council this year for the coming council elections in October. But we have her on the line mainly to have a bit of a discussion about the issues around privatisation and the COVID-19 pandemic as it has hit Melbourne. And essentially, more specifically, focusing on the whole issue of aged care, because essentially there has been a whole crisis related to aged care as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic as it has kind of hit Melbourne. And maybe I guess we can sort of start off this discussion, Sue, by, I guess, or what could you give, I guess, a bit of an overview, I guess, of, you know, how disastrous this sort of, the effects of privatisation has been in terms of how it has impacted on the aged care centre and the casualisation of work?
Well, to start off with, the aged care sector was deregulated quite a number of years ago, and people might not realise it, but the change of terminology from nursing home to aged care homes or aged care centres was when deregulation happened. And so now there are very few government-run aged care centres. Mostly they're private, either private for-profit or they might be not-for-profit. But these days, with so much formerly government services having been shoved off into private or not-for-profit companies, a lot of not-for-profit organisations operate just like companies operating for a profit. And you would say that aged care sector was a sitting duck. And the main reason I say that is that most of them have no registered nurses or only one registered nurse connected with the enterprise, or maybe they might have a couple of registered nurses, but they don't have a registered nurse on every shift, available every shift. And then that single or, you know, either small number or single registered nurse, when they're there, they're really only able to deal with dishing out the medication, not really properly investigating the welfare of all of the elderly people within the nursing home. And so a lot of the nursing homes do run with very high levels of casualised staff, agency staff, and that's really what happens with nursing in general now anyway, and many sectors of the economy, of the workforce. And so I think the whole cost-cutting within the aged care sector, where there's so few or not many registered nurses, is a key aspect. But there's also another aspect of privatisation, and that is that a lot of aged care workers who do their training not with public TAFEs, but with registered training organisations, you know, some of them are dodgy private training organisations, only get access to online training. And they don't do practical work. Whereas with public TAFEs, if you do your course with a public TAFE, you do prac work in the workplace. And so you learn and start to understand how things should work. So a lot of those workers have not been trained in infection control in any genuine way. So that's another element where we've got two elements of privatisation coming together.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things that kind of Daniel Andrews kind of said, and it's been quite interesting, has there appears to be a bit of sort of spin coming from the government, with the Scott Morrison government basically trying, with Scott Morrison, not the government per se, Scott Morrison arguing that, you know, when it comes to the old aged care crisis, the government is doing everything that it can to do, and that the so-called private operators have been doing everything they can to, you know, deal with the pandemic. Whereas Daniel Andrews has actually given off, you know, a different sort of set of messaging, which where he actually kind of points out that the private sort of operators have, private aged care centres have been terrible, and most of the cases have been linked to private aged care centres. So what is your sort of comments, I guess, on this sort of disconnect between what Scott Morrison is saying in terms of the government spin that he's putting and what Daniel Andrews is saying about this whole crisis?
Well, I think that's partly because the federal government is responsible for aged care. They're responsible for investigating complaints about aged care. They're responsible. They set up the whole framework for aged care. They're the ones who deregulated the aged care system and, in reality, caused this crisis that we're seeing in aged care today. So they are responsible, but I think this is where they're is a certain politicking. They don't want to be associated with this aged care crisis, so they're passing the buck to the state governments, like previously in New South Wales, when the Newmarch and the Dorothy Henderson Lodge disasters happened with COVID getting into aged care there, and that was a disaster for the New South Wales government. But there probably is some link, some connection that the health authorities in the states also have with aged care. I'm not sure the extent of that link, because obviously the state governments are managing the COVID-19 crisis within the states and setting the regulations and so forth. But the federal government is responsible for this totally deregulated system of aged care and the standards. And really, the federal government is also culpable for the disaster in aged care in Victoria. In Victoria, of the 700 or so aged care homes, I think 178 are from the Victorian government. And I believe there are only 5 cases of COVID in the government-run aged care homes, whereas the rest, the bulk of, you know, 800 or so infections in the private and not-for-profit aged care homes, not in the government homes. And that's because there are more nurses employed in the government-run aged care homes.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing is I want to hear a bit of sort of comments, I guess, on the whole issues around casualisation of work in general, going beyond sort of aged care and this COVID-19 pandemic, because there was a recent comment by Daniel Andrews where a lot of this, even though the cases at this point for COVID-19 do appear to be dying off a bit, which is good as of Wednesday. Unfortunately, this show is being recorded on a Thursday morning, so we don't have the case numbers for Thursday, and by the time this show will go to air, the case numbers might be different. But there's still ongoing issue around casualisation of work, and the Daniel Andrews government has implemented a number of measures, such as giving people who get tested for COVID-19 access to a $250 payment. If they test positive for COVID-19, they get a $1,500 off payment. But then there's a stark comment by Daniel Andrews where he kind of said, if you are sick, you should not go to work. And I guess what is just your response on the sort of inadequacies of the Andrews government and this whole issue of casualisation of work and the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, I'd say this is both the Andrews government but also the federal government, because basically I think the federal government, which runs industrial relations in this country and prevents unions having clauses in agreements to convert casual work to full-time work for workers who want to be want permanent jobs and full-time work. And so it's basically we have a scourge of casualisation through the whole Australian workforce where we've lost the right to a permanent job. And this goes in sector after sector, construction, security guards, nursing, teaching. Like this has become the run of the mill way in which workers work in this country, not to mention gig economy workers where you're told you're your own employer. All the Uber Eats workers and, delivery riders and so forth. And basically workers have the right to permanent work. And so the federal government needs to change the laws to force bosses to provide workers with full-time ongoing work. A lot of the casual workers all over the country are, they're working at the same workplace, year after year. Some might have been casual workers for 10 plus years, but they're not eligible for long service leave. They're not eligible for holiday leave. They're not eligible for any kind of rights. And so I think it's not just a state government issue. It's a federal government issue as well as a state government issue. But then obviously there is the need for these payments. Now the Victorian government has given some payments and now they have agreed to give workers, I believe it is $300 a day, from the day they get tested to the day that they receive their results, because I think the numbers of people getting tested now, the number of days between when you get tested and when you get the results is more days now. And so some workers were going to work because if they didn't feel very well because they weren't eligible for any pay from the government. So the Victorian government has given, as the crisis has escalated, they have given, some pay to workers from the state government. But it's sort of, this is all happening as the crisis escalates in the same way that the government was forced to introduce JobKeeper and increase JobSeeker at the beginning of the crisis. Blind Freddy could tell that workers would be going to work sick if they weren't given increased job seeker. Like it's the whole thing is really, I think, a crisis of capitalism. And this casualisation is a worldwide policy. It's not just an Australian policy. The capitalist class across the world has forced workers onto short-term contracts and various forms of casualisation all over the world in their cost-cutting. And then we've also had the situation where employers are refusing to provide workers with COVID-safe workforces, PPE. The other impact of casualisation is that it's impossible to maintain an infection-free system. And we heard from a nurse who had worked in hotel quarantine where the issues in hotel quarantine weren't just the security guards but the nursing as well, because the nurses were all casual workers. You didn't have permanency amongst either the nurses or the security guards. And so people are constantly telling new workers on the job, where you put the contaminated material, where you put the uncontaminated material, et cetera, et cetera. But the systems keeps breaking down because it's all verbal communication, new group of workers, a new group of workers every day. And so it's very difficult to maintain any proper infection control system, even with the best will in the world, even with nurses who've got more training than security guards. So it's that casualisation makes things really difficult, and including in aged care, as we've seen.
And I think it's, sorry, I'll just jump in there. That's there's a real link between the whole purpose of contractualization and casualization is to stop those workers having those deeper links with each other, because that's the sort of situation in which you have a unionized workforce. So the whole point of this is to stop workers being able to have a deeper ongoing understanding, collective understanding of their workplace and the ins and outs of it, and developing that close teamwork, because that's a situation under which people might unionize, heaven forbid.
That's right. So it's, you know, you create that solidarity and potential unionization or deeper levels of unionization, and it's cost cutting as well. And there is an international race to push workers down to the lowest wages possible. And it happens within countries and between countries as well. That's, quite frequently, there'll be mass sackings of workers who do have permanent jobs, and they'll be replaced by casual or contracted, there are all sorts of different labour hire contracts. And that's the situation you get. And so then when you have a situation of a virus like this, then that makes it harder. And then also on top of that, if you have a precarious situation where workers are not eligible for any kind of assistance, if they're not like job seeker or job keeper, if they don't go to work, then that also magnifies the problem. And I actually haven't properly checked to see if workers who are not eligible for a healthcare card are eligible for some of these payments, or workers who are not who are on temporary migrant visas are eligible for some of the payments through the Victorian government. They may be, because the crisis is so strong here. But we know that one of the reasons why some people might not have been going to work because they were when they were really ill, but when they might have just had a scratchy throat or just felt ever so slightly off colour. And, if you're a worker on a temporary visa, you're asylum seekers, some categories of New Zealanders, international students, backpackers who got stuck in Australia during the lockdown and so needed work, like various people, who are not eligible for any kind of assistance from the government. Yeah, you have to go to work. Otherwise, you will end up on the streets. And we've seen that as workers who've lost their jobs or had their shifts reduced because of COVID have been forced, like international students been forced to move in with other international students in a very overcrowded situation because they've also lost their accommodation. Then, of course, once one person gets COVID, it's going to run through the whole house because it's a totally overcrowded house. You can't isolate in an overcrowded house.
Yeah. Well, we might conclude this interview now. Do you have any final comments you'd like to make, Sue?
Well, I think what we do need to see is that aged care system needs to become a public system again, so that there's accountability, and there needs to be a nurse-patient ratio that the nurses' union has been calling for a long time. We need these homes to be staffed with permanent staff, whether they're permanent full-time workers, permanent part-time workers, and we need proper training for aged care staff, not these dodgy brothers private training organisations that just run people through an online course, but, proper training like there used to be through the public TAFE system. And also there needs to be multilingual staff, which there probably were at St Basil's, which is one of the worst affected aged care homes in Melbourne. But the replacement staff in the privately owned medical company Aspen International None of them spoke Greek. They couldn't communicate with any of the residents, and most of the residents were Greek speakers. And elderly people, even if they have learnt English well during their lifetime in Australia, tend to revert, especially if people have got dementia, tend to revert to their mother tongue and lose the second language. I mean, that's quite a frequent thing. And so we there all of these sorts of disasters which happen when you don't have, you know, a really full-time permanent workforce. So and we really need the federal government to basically change industrial relations laws to encourage force employers to have a permanently employed staff, so that casual workers are only there to cover, you know, spikes in work and that kind of thing. That was the original intention of casual work, was that it would only be there to cover when there was a sudden surge in work before work went back to its normal level. Whereas now we have, you know, lots of businesses, huge numbers of businesses that employ people casually, regardless of whether it's standard level of work or spikes of work.